Welcome to The Piker Years, a collection of short stories by me, Jerry Seeger, originally published at pikerpress.com. Today's episode, Moonlight Sonata. The American sat, hunched over the white oak table, somehow casting a shadow despite the constellation of halogen lights in their nouveau tech moderne fixtures. Shadows were not welcome in the coffee shop, nor the dark thoughts and secrets they might harbor. The American didn't belong in that land of polished chrome and brittle acoustics. His pained expression tightened further when the coffee grinder ran or the steam valve was turned on to foam someone's latte. Jagged sounds that somehow the rest of us had learned not to hear. He was a creature of the night, of darkness and smoke and bleary-eyed hours, wondering what the hell you're doing and why doesn't anything make sense. I visited the night world sometimes to play music and escape the glare of the day, but I was not from there. Around us moved the day people, stylish and forcefully cheerful. They laughed at each other's jokes and told stories of petty conflicts in which the speaker was always right. Mingled with the sounds of labor-intensive coffee was a constant background of ringtones, of chatter with other day people who weren't there, shrill conversations between disembodied and placeless spirits, coiffed in glittering points of light and noise. With his left hand, the American clung to a coffee mug, knuckles white, while his right hand moved solemnly, as if playing an unseen piano. I recognized the stately lines of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, spare and beguiling. I watched him play his music, his fingers brushing the table with gentle assurance, the tendons standing out on the back of his hand. I watched his fingers draw the graceful, deceptively simple lines of the song. He did not play with precision, but each time his finger touched the table I felt the note, and when he struck harder the ghost of the note rang in my head, and it was beautiful. I am a piano player, but at that moment I was the American's instrument. He didn't seem to notice. Between his hands was a slip of paper, smudged and creased, lying flattened out on the polished table. He never took his eyes off it. His lips worked as if he was sounding out words written there, but from where I sat, I could see the paper was blank. His fingers changed their pattern. It took me a moment to recognize Beethoven's Für Elise. Still just the right-hand part, his left hand maintained its depth grip on the forgotten coffee mug. None of the day people among us noticed the darkness in their midst. None stopped to wonder what might bring one such as him into their world. I could look at nothing else. He was not merely a creature of the night, of the desperate and profligate shadow world that emerges long after the sun has gone down. He was a mad demon prince of that realm, and his presence here meant the end had finally come. He turned and fixed me with red-rimmed eyes, pulled me in despite my sudden desire to escape. I had looked at his paper, and now I owed him an answer. His right hand reached the roller coaster moment in the music, when the car is creeping up to the top of the steepest drop, his fingers playing the two notes back and forth, more and more slowly, with increasing urgency. His voice carried a sadness that made me feel 100 years old. "There's nothing there, is there?" he asked. I could have said no. I could have declared myself to be a creature of the light, who believes in absolutes and knows a blank piece of paper when he sees it. But at that moment I was no longer confident. I was peering through his mantle of shadow, the paper possibly its source, and the night touched me. Nothing is certain in the night world. "Nothing I can see," I answered. He nodded slowly, in time to the music, his eyes fixed back on the paper, his lips working silently again. "Supposed to be a message," he said. With my eyes I had been listening to the music he played. From where I was, at the edge of the darkness, I could hear the notes faintly, echoing from far away. "Do you know what music this is?" he asked. "Für Elise. Beethoven." He looked back up at me. "It's starting to piss me off." "Why don't you play something else?" "I'm not the one playing it, man." I stopped myself from asking the obvious question. "I was hoping it was you," he said. "I'm not that good," Something bumped into my leg. A stroller guided by an impatient-looking young woman. "Prosim," she said tartly. I was leaning out into the space between our tables and blocking traffic. I pulled back, and she pushed by with a clack of her tall boots and a flip of her colorful scarf, for a moment isolating me from the mystery at the next table. Then she was past, leaving a sharp tang of perfume to compete with the coffee smells, and the music had changed once more. I gathered up my things and moved to his side of the aisle, hanging my long coat over the back of my chair, laying my folio near his clenched left hand. I watched his right hand play. I could feel the notes, but didn't recognize the music. Not Beethoven, that was for sure. More like Philip Glass, haunting repetition, gradually transforming. "I'm more of a blues man myself," the American said. "I've seen you before. You played with old Ray Black down at the Rat the night he died." I nodded. That had been 2 months ago. The Rathskeller was a tiny place filled with smoke and sweat. It was the sort of place that didn't really get started before 1 or 2 in the morning, when everyone who knew better was home in bed. The bar was small, the stage was tiny, but the piano was always in tune. Or perfectly out of tune. None of the notes it played was quite right, but it resonated with the place. Old Ray Black had been a regular there, and people who knew always filled the house when he played. That night, the Rat had been getting hotter and hotter as we played, but old Ray Black had taken that heat and worked it with the smoke and despair in the room until what came out of his ancient guitar wasn't just sound, it was a beast that reached forth and feasted on the lives of the audience and left them begging for more. They were shouting and clapping, and old Ray Black didn't stop. He just rolled on, and his gravelly voice rang out over the noise of the crowd like a church bell on a quiet Sunday morning. The place was packed, and no one was leaving. The creature that was old Ray's music grew, and when I looked over at the old bluesman, I felt the world tip, and I was looking down into a chasm of his soul, and my fingers played the lines I found there. I could feel the bass player next to me, and I could count the heartbeats in the audience as the music danced in its garden of souls. I was just an instrument, just part of the piano. It was almost dawn when we finally stopped.
"Well, guess I'm done,"
old Ray Black said. He lit a cigarette, took a long drag, and fell over dead, smashing his guitar. I didn't remember seeing this American at the Rat. But there's a lot I don't remember about that night. I don't remember how the fire started, and I don't remember leaving. The piano, the bass, the guitar, and old Ray Black himself had been burned to ashes. The fire had taken the Rathskeller, taken in its stained and battered carpet, its hand-carved bar, its horrifying men's room, and had left a blackened hole in the city. Yeah, that was me.
That was a good show, the American said.
The music stopped. The American's fingers hovered over the tabletop, suddenly uncertain. He looked at them, waiting for another message.
None came.
His left hand clung to his still full cup of coffee. The paper sat unmoving, the center of the universe. Slowly he relaxed his grip, and the jangle of the coffee shop reached my ears again.
"Still blank?" he asked me.
Somewhere between the smudges and the creases and the grain of the paper itself, something moved. Something that didn't show in the harsh light. "What do you see?" I asked. "Let's go get a drink," he said. "I'm supposed to meet someone here," I said.
"She's not coming."
I knew he was right. I had always known. A drink sounded good. "Let's go then," I said. He released the mug and picked up the paper carefully with both hands, folding it and placing it in his coat pocket with exaggerated delicacy. He took a deep breath and stood.
"People around here call me Cowboy Bob," he said, holding out his hand.
He did not resemble a cowboy in any way, but names bestowed by the night people follow a different sort of logic. I shook his hand, wondering if any of the power that had guided his fingers would rub off on me. "Paul Sharp," I said. Cowboy Bob nodded absently. He already knew who I was, anyway. I should have been able to recognize him if he had been at the Rat or any of the other little places I play. To get a nickname like his, you have to be around for a while. Then again, on the night side, I was little more than a tourist. As I was putting on my coat, Cowboy Bob said, "I'm from Detroit. We need to get drunk."
We stepped out onto the sidewalk, and I wrapped my scarf tighter around my neck. Clouds were billowing up over the rooftops, and the wind was bringing biting cold down from the north. Cowboy Bob looked at the clouds, then up and down the street. "We need a jukebox," he said, "and whiskey, good Kentucky bourbon." I didn't say anything. I prefer scotch, but old Ray Black had been a bourbon man. It seemed like a good idea to hoist one for the old master. Cowboy Bob turned right and headed down Vinohradska toward the old city center. "Gestapo's on the tram today," he said. "We'll have to walk." Apparently, the idea of paying to ride had not occurred to him. That was all right. I enjoyed walking as long as it wasn't raining. We passed down Václavské náměstí, ignoring the glittering new shops and the hustlers out on the street promoting strip clubs that never closed. Cowboy Bob passed through the directionless tourists as if they didn't exist, and I followed in his wake. Past the square, in the oldest part of the city, we turned onto a smaller street. Havelska, maybe, or perhaps Vejvodová. I was starting to lose track of where we were. From there we went through a courtyard and into an alley I didn't recognize, a narrow, cobbled canyon the sun never penetrated. Newspapers lay unmoving in the gloom, trapped in puddles that lined the gutter. We were alone. The doors on either side of the alley were closed and unmarked, with the exception of a narrow door standing open some 20 meters ahead. Cowboy Bob went to it and entered without hesitating. I followed, pausing to read the crude sign on the door. Unikde. Nowhere. I followed the American down a creaking flight of stairs which turned three times, through another door, and into a subterranean bar. Simple incandescent fixtures hung from the vaulted ceiling, while the brickwork pillars cast deep shadows. Empty tables occupied arched nooks, lit only by single flickering candles. The floorboards resonated hollowly with our steps, as if nothing lay beneath. The quiet of the place was itself a presence, and my new friend's shadows blended perfectly with the darkness. I followed him deeper into the labyrinth, to a large chamber lined with dark wood, the beamed ceiling supported with more brickwork arches. At one end of the room lurked a bar, only slightly better lit than the rest of the place. Behind it, a young man with dark hair idly polished a glass. When he recognized Cowboy Bob, he reached for a bottle. "Dobry den," I mumbled, and he answered with a nod. "Mickey, we need the music loud," Cowboy Bob called out when he reached the jukebox. "Bring some money over here," he said to me. I dug into my pocket, and he started punching buttons. I chose a table nearby, and as I sat, Mickey arrived with two glasses of Kentucky Jack, no ice. Not the finest, but old Ray Black would have liked it. Mickey returned to the bar, but didn't put the bottle away. Cowboy Bob reached the table just as TV Ray Vaughn's "Couldn't Stand the Weather" exploded in the quiet bar. He sat and held himself still for a moment, eyes closed, and the shadows of the bar mingled with his own. Before he touched his glass, my companion pulled the paper out of his pocket and unfolded it, gently smoothing it out on the table. In that light, it looked different to me. The smudges were darker and more coherent, and there was a new dark spot where the paper had absorbed a stray drop of whiskey off the table. The drop fit some pattern I could almost see. After placing the paper exactly between us, he looked up at me. I shook my head no. Not yet. Cowboy Bob lifted his glass and I followed suit. He held it before him, a high priest calling the brethren to prayer. If he was the priest, I was the virgin, the sacrificial lamb. He took a sip of his booze and, eyes closed, drew air over his tongue, savoring the fumes as the alcohol evaporated in his mouth. I took a drink. His right hand was twitching, and it took me a moment to realize that he was picking along with Stevie. In his left hand, he held the whiskey up to the light, looking through it with one eye closed. "You think there's anything in here?" he asked. He had to raise his voice to be heard over the music. I started to shrug, but then stopped myself. No taking the easy way out this time. "Yeah," I said. There was something in the bourbon. There was a mystical fire and inescapable debt. A little hope and far more despair. "The devil's in here," Cowboy Bob said, and drained his glass. He took a deep breath and held it for a moment. "Not anymore," he said as he exhaled. With a grin, he smacked his glass down onto the dark oak table. In the low light, his teeth flashed unnaturally white. He's mine now. The jukebox moved on to Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone while two more glasses appeared in front of us. The American's right hand played the Hammond. There's not a single recording of old Ray Black anywhere, Cowboy Bob said. I found that hard to believe. Even if there were no official recordings, his followers would have smuggled recorders into every venue he played. I thought of the power of his last performance. Surely that was not lost forever. There's got to be bootlegs, I said. Nope. Doesn't work that way. I took another swig of the booze. It burned at my nose but danced in my head. It's too early in the day for this, I thought. But in that little cave, it was always night. We drank and the jukebox played, far longer than I thought it should have for the money I had given. If there were any others in the bar besides Mickey, they blended with the shadows as well as my companion did. Sometimes he seemed to vanish even as he sat directly across from me. The paper glowed in the pale light. It seemed to breathe as it lay there. It seemed larger than the bar, larger than the world. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see it move, but when I looked straight at it, nothing had changed. Sultans of Swing ended, and another song started. It was a simple piano piece, a vine that grew and slowly bore beautiful flowers. I had heard it many times before, but now it was as if Beethoven himself was playing it, far away, an echo through the centuries. Yet it was as if I was inside the piano itself. I looked down to see my right hand tracing Moonlight Sonata on the rough tabletop. Cowboy Bob stood. As he shrugged on his coat, the breeze stirred the paper where it lay on the table, turning it, moving it closer to me. My breath caught. The stains and smudges had coalesced, not into writing exactly, but meaning. I stared at the page harder, my lips working to make words of what I saw, but the significance escaped me, slipping through my grasp. Old Ray gave that to me the night he died. It's supposed to be a message, Cowboy Bob said. But old Ray Black couldn't write. Never learned how. See you around. He turned and left. I am a piano player. People come to hear me now, the ones who know, but there are no recordings of me anywhere. I've been in every bar, absorbing the night and becoming the night, but I've never seen Cowboy Bob. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the story, and I hope you stick around to hear more stories in this collection. The opening music is Nine Whole Lives by Piccola Orchestra Gagarin. The music you hear now is Rolling of the Stones by Abunai. Both are licensed under Creative Commons. You can read the terms for each track at freemusicarchive.org. This podcast and its contents are copyright by Jerry Seeger and are made available for your use under the Creative Commons license with attribution and share alike. See you next time.